everyone, and welcome to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast. My name is Suzanne Gill, and I'm a partner in the commercial property team, and I'm joined today by Ben Dunbar, who's a legal director in the commercial property team.
Hello, everyone.
So you've got some service charge cases to talk about. I'm always asked by my clients what's reasonable, and Ben, you've got the answer.
That's right. I'm going to talk about two cases where the tenants challenged the landlord's assessments of a reasonable proportion of service charges. And they both concern what it means to act reasonably, and it might not be what you think it means.
Well, that's fantastic, Ben. You go ahead and tell us what the cases are.
Well, the first case is called Bradley and Rhodes versus Abacus Land 4 Limited. And it concerned Romney House in Westminster, which had been converted from an office block into 168 residential flats and four commercial units. And the flats were on 999-year leases, and the residential leaseholders had the right to use facilities designated by the landlord for communal use, and this included a gym. So to start with, from 2006 to 2013, the gym was used exclusively by the residents. The landlord charged 100% of the running costs to the residential leaseholders. But then, in 2013, the landlord granted a separate long lease of the gym to a personal trainer. And he was going to operate the gym, and he would pay a rent of £5,000 per annum, but he wouldn't pay any contribution to the service charge. And the landlord would remain responsible for all the repair and maintenance of the gym.
So, did this £5,000 the landlord receive go towards the tenants at all?
Well, it did. It seems like the gym tenant had very favourable terms, but the landlord did at least offset the £5,000 rent against the cost of running the gym. So the leaseholders had a slight discount through the service charge, and they continued to use the gym, but of course not exclusively, because members of the public were now there as well. Now, it continued like this for a couple of years until the period of COVID, when unfortunately the parties all fell out. The gym was shut, it wasn't making any income, and there was a dispute between the landlord and the gym tenant about the arrears of rent that built up and also the state of repair of the gym. The landlord agreed to refurbish the gym as part of the settlement at a cost of £218,000. It then sought to recover all of those costs from the residential leaseholders through their service charges.
Instantly, I can see where the dispute comes from, and there must be a case. How did they bring that case? What act did they use?
Well, two leaseholders, as you'd expect, sought to challenge under Section 27A of the Landlord and Tenant Act 1985. Now, this is something to bear in mind with mixed-use developments. Residential leaseholders have statutory rights in respect to service charges, and this Act gives them the right to make an application to the first-tier tribunal for a determination of whether a service charge is payable, and if it is, who by and how much.
So that's the 85 Act interferes with residential service charges in a way that you definitely wouldn't find in a commercial service charge.
Exactly. But if you've got a building with commercial tenants on the ground floor and residential tenants above, then they're going to be able to use this to challenge potentially elements of the service charge. And that's exactly what happened here. Now, the first tier tribunal sided with the landlord. It was okay to put 100% of the costs of the maintenance of the gym through the service charge to the residential leaseholders, but the leaseholders appealed and the upper tribunal sided with them. Now, the landlord then appealed to the Court of Appeal.
Goodness, it's going on and on, this service charge dispute. And which way did the Court of Appeal go?
Well, the important thing here is to start with the specific lease wording. Here, the leaseholders' leases required them to pay a specified share of the service charge costs, and it was defined as such fair proportion of the costs as the landlord acting reasonably shall from time to time determine. And the Court of Appeal said that the key issue was what is the correct test to apply to determine whether the landlord's decision was reasonable. And there were two interpretations. Does acting reasonably mean that the landlord has to make a decision that's objectively reasonable? Or does it mean that the landlord has to make a decision that's not outside a range of decisions that a reasonable landlord could reach?
Well, that is definitely the question, isn't it? Because there are many decisions that you could make within a range, all of which would probably be reasonable.
Yes, and in fact, that interpretation is the one the Court of Appeal went with. They said that they had sympathy with the leaseholders, but whether the apportionment was unfair wasn't quite the question. The first-tier tribunal only really had jurisdiction limited to deciding whether the landlord had acted in breach of contract, on that wording we talked about in the lease. It doesn't have jurisdiction to substitute its own view of fairness or something that's objectively reasonable. It has to look at whether the decision was one no reasonable landlord could have reached.
Mm.
And if it is, then the landlord was in breach of contract. And, of course, here the landlord had acted within the bounds of rational and reasonable judgment. The landlord made a decision that was within the reasonable range of options that it could have made. The leaseholders had lost exclusive use to the gym, but, of course, they had continued to benefit from its use. And they would have had to pay for all the costs of maintenance had there not been a gym tenant in the picture anyway. Furthermore, the obligation in the gym tenant's lease was on the landlord to fully repair the gym without getting any contribution from the gym tenant. So in those circumstances, it wasn't unreasonable, let alone irrational, for the landlord to seek 100% of the cost from the leaseholders. Of course, another option would have been for the landlord to bear some of the cost itself, and that probably would have been within the range of reasonable decisions as well. But if it couldn't have recovered the 100%, then perhaps the landlord wouldn't have repaired the gym quite so well, and that wouldn't have been in the leaseholder's interest. So to sum up, to charge 100% of the cost was within the range of decisions that a reasonable landlord could make.
I can see that on some readings, the leaseholders are getting exactly what they would have got before the gym lease was imposed on them. So you can see where the court's coming from there. What are the key takeaways for landlords and tenants from this case?
Well, for landlords, it's a good decision. It's landlord friendly. It means that in similar situations to this, where we're talking about residential leaseholders, landlords should only be challenged on service charge apportionments if they've made a decision that isn't reasonably defensible. Their decision needs to fall within a range of reasonable decisions, and that's not that hard, after all. The landlord does need to record its rationale in case it is going to be challenged later on. This decision's going to help landlords. It should reduce the scope of challenges by disgruntled leaseholders based on perceived unfairness, and particularly in mixed-use developments.
So what then should tenants do? Because tenants are always unhappy about residential service charges, as far as I can work out.
Well, it's not such a good case for tenants. They should probably take extra care when they're signing up to leases, particularly where the buildings are multi-use and where they may find that they're paying for facilities through the service charge that they're not getting sole use of or overpaying for. The only real answer for tenants who are worried about their service charge is to seek a service charge cap or perhaps specific exclusions when they're negotiating the lease at heads of term stage.
Okay, so that's our first case, a gym in Westminster. And your next one is case, I think, Ben, is also a central London mixed-use property, isn't it?
It is. It's an unusual one. It concerns a theatre. It's called Criterion Buildings Limited versus McKinsey & Co. Inc. And it's along similar lines to the first case because it concerns the proper apportionment of service charge costs between tenants. And the case concerned the Criterion building in Piccadilly Circus. McKinsey Inc. was one of the tenants, but the building also contained the Criterion Theatre, who were a tenant. And McKinsey was being charged service charge at over £2.2 million, covering the period from 2014 to 2019. And it disputed this service charge, and there were various aspects to the case, but part of the dispute involved McKinsey claiming that the service charge apportionment unfairly favoured the Criterion Theatre.
So in this case, I think McKinsey just stopped paying service charge, didn't they? And the landlord had to sue them to get the service charge back, which is how the dispute was provoked. What did the lease say?
That's right. So again, going back to the lease, it said that McKinsey had to pay a fair proportion to be determined by the landlord or the landlord surveyors, taking into account the use made of and the benefit received from the services and expenses.
So we're back to the question, what does fair mean?
That's right. And again, the question is, does it mean objectively fair? Or does the landlord have some subjective discretion? Is it like the first case? Is it more akin to the landlord acting in a rational manner?
Mm.
Well, what happened here was McKinsey, who of course are famous as management consultants and analysing their clients' accounts, they really went to town on their service charge. They went into such granular detail, they started saying they'd been charged 54.42% of the costs of certain services, but a fairer proportion would have been 46.74%.
Very precise.
Yeah, I don't understand quite why McKinsey had been there for 25 years and hadn't raised any queries over the service charge before. But here, they argued it was manifestly unfair that the theatre was receiving an 80% discount on its service charge. McKinsey argued this wasn't justified based on the consumption or the benefit derived by the theatre from the services supplied. After all, if the landlord was repairing the building, the outside, the roof, the foundations, the theatre were benefiting as well.
Mm.
So they were saying it wasn't objectively fair. But a bit like the first case, the judge held that that wasn't the correct question. The issue was it rational? And the judge held here that the landlord was entitled to exercise its discretion as to what was a fair proportion. It had to make a rational decision, and it had here.
How would that decision, if it was 80% though, how had that decision been rational?
Yes, it does seem a lot, doesn't it? Well, the landlord had actually looked at the way the building worked, and of course the theatre had a big hole in the middle. It was only really the ground floor with the stalls and the stage on that were fully occupied, if you like. Then it had the gods and the balconies. But of course, it was like a donut. It was hollow in the middle. And so the landlord had decided that a fair proportion involved an 80% discount for the theatre.
So the net internal area of a void is zero.
Yes. And of course, there's various decisions that the landlord could have made. That's not necessarily how you always treat a void, but the court held that the landlord had made a reasonable decision and a rational decision. The onus was on McKinsey to show why this apportionment wasn't a due proportion, and at no point had they disputed its rationality. The landlord had taken into account the nature of the space occupied by the theatre, and that was a legitimate consideration, and it had decided 80% was fair.
OK, so what are the takeaways from this case then? First for landlords and then for tenants.
Well, for landlords, this is another favourable judgment. In cases where it can be said that the apportionment has no direct bearing on the landlord, they made quite a thing about that here, then the landlord's entitled to apportion the service charge subjectively, as long as it can justify the considerations it's taken into account and they're not irrational. Again, the landlord should record the rationale, make sure that it's taken into account the situation properly and that these are all legitimate considerations that it's thought about. And for tenants, again, it's a reminder that just having references to fair or reasonable when it's a matter of the landlord making a decision, those references aren't really going to help them that much, because as long as the landlord isn't irrational, it's got a surprisingly wide discretion. So really, the tenant needs to make inquiries as to the apportionments of service charge prior to taking a new lease or an assignment of an existing lease. And if it's taking a new lease, if it can, it should try and negotiate service charge caps or specific exclusions.
And in either case, the replies to service charge inquiries, which we get as commercial lawyers on the grant of a lease, typically you've got pages and pages of schedules showing what proportion of which expenditure has been allocated to which unit. And I think what you're saying is in mixed use buildings, it's really important to drill down into the detail of those before you sign up.
Definitely. And of course, it's for the tenants' advisors to really drill down into the detail, as McKinsey did, and make sure that they advise the tenant so it knows what it's going to be on the hook for during the term of the lease.
Well, thank you very much, Ben. Some interesting cases there with food for thought. Cheers from the landlord clients, not so much from the tenant. Thank you for listening.
Thanks very much.